see that you all have a copy of the agenda in front of you. Just to run down the agenda, we have opening welcome, introduction, apologies, briefing by the Department of Higher Education and Training on progress report in the migration process of technical and vocational education and training colleges and adult education and training centers. We will then receive inputs by the following stakeholders: Adult Education Progressive Union. I just want to check if they're here. They're here. Adult Learning Network. Okay, we have ALN here. Further Education and Training Colleges Employers Organization. Not here. Okay, but they've confirmed that they were part of this meeting. Public Service Association. Okay, thank you very much. From there, we will then have discussions and then relieve our guests and proceed with business of the committee. I just want to check from the DG if you have any additions. DG, any additions to the agenda? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, now here. Okay. No, thank you very much. I'm made to believe that the minister is on his way here. But must remember today is a cabinet day, and we must count ourselves as privileged to have the minister joining us this morning. Honorable minister. Thank you very much. We're very happy to have you here. And I have received also an apology from the Deputy Minister, who said he will divide himself between this meeting and the Cabinet. So I'm sure he'll be walking here after, I don't know where he's starting, but it is taking him to spend some time here and then spend some time outside. Okay. That's fine. We are on opening and welcome. Honourable Minister, you have now to have all your documents. Okay, thank you very much. Now, under opening, well, as the tradition of this committee, shall we open with a prayer? But because we come from different religious groups, and the Constitution prescribes that the Godish should tolerate, I will then request that we observe a moment of silence for prayer and meditation. Amen. Thank you very much. Well, the Honorable Minister, Honorable Members, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to take this opportunity and welcome all of you. A special word of welcome is extended to the Minister, but also to your Adult Education Progressive Union, Adult Learning Network, FETCO and PSA. And I would also like to extend a special welcome to the DG and your team. Well, this is our meeting. I want all of us to feel free so that we can participate and give this meeting your best shot. It's not about us, it's about the quality outcome. The meeting. I know you're all prepared for this meeting. Presently, as we converge here this morning, the understanding is that the former technical colleges and colleges of education training centers have been merged into 50 TVET colleges aimed at having a stronger institution. I repeat, stronger institution that will address the skills development problem or challenge confronting our country that will assist us to achieve on the transformation, on the radical socio-economic transformation phase. In the past, I didn't call it that, but after reading an article where the minister, you know, was speaking, I then learned about the phase, so I then combined it to make it a radical socio-economic transformation phase. That was the first time when I learned about it. I was dividing the two. I'll say this, and this is the second phase, and but it helped me. So thank you very much. So that's where we are. But then the government responded by coming up with a white paper that was adopted, and presently that white paper is at the stage where the department is developing an implementation phase, but we are implementing while they are coming up with the actual implementation plan, so that indeed at the end of the day we can achieve all on the objective of the white paper, that of ensuring that the pivot strengthens, but also ensuring expansion of TVET into attractive institutions of choice for school leavers. Attractive institutions of choice for school leavers. Well, technical and vocational education and training colleges, other than education and training centers, have been largely managed by provincial education departments. Although they are under the auspices of the Department of Higher Education and Training. This arrangement has had its fair share of challenges. So we share the same sentiments on this one. This was clear in our oversight visits when we discovered an anomaly that deputy principals are not remunerated at the same level. Some deputy principals are remunerated at level 11 and others are remunerated at level 12. We are certain that this would not have happened if the TVET colleges were managed at a central point, that is by the Department of Higher Education and Training. It is obvious that provincial departments had different policies when it came to appointing deputy principals. It is obvious to us that the function shift is long overdue, so that cases like these can be speedily resolved, the standardization introduced, and people are treated equally. Now, in this meeting, we have also invited different stakeholders who are within the TVET and AEP sector. They are also most welcome in this meeting, and we are happy for them to raise their concerns after the DHEG has done its presentation. So today we're looking forward to getting a progress report from the DG, who is the accounting officer of the department, and also get actually this is how I would like the meeting to approach. We allow the minister to give remarks, and then the DG will then give us a presentation, because I want to believe that we can still benefit from the guidance of the minister on his vision and where the achievement of his vision is by now. So, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sure you all are feeling at home now. And in terms of the agenda, we then have to move on to your introduction. From my side, because we've got guests, I am Bingi Porter. I'm the chairperson of the commission. But did you see why? That's my official name, Ivoshi. This side, honorable members.
Thank you, Chair. Belinda Brody, member of Akashi.
Okay, I'm observing that the honorable members is right at the back. Please come forward. Honorable member Killian, maybe they'll sit here. You want to sit at the back? All right. Let me, don't worry, honorable minister, let me apply my mind on what I want and then I'll come back on this. Eventually I'll come back on this one. Okay, over to you.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Yusuf Kashan. I'm a member of the committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Denji Khan. I'm a member of the committee. Chair, my name is Shukumbasa. I'm a member of the committee.
Morning, everyone. My name is Boligrem Tono, a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Shuela El, is a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Benjamin Frida, member of the committee.
Morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Julie Killian and I'm also a member of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, I will now move this side and start with the Honourable Minister.
I'm playing to the west from Tabuza Road.
Let me correctly capture this one. Dr. Blade Zimande, the Minister of the Department of Higher Education and Training. Over to you, sir.
Thank you. Morning, Chairperson. My name is Feroz Patel. I'm the DDG for Planning in the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Morning, Chairperson. I'm Tamam Flipa from the Project Management Office, Function Shift.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Gwerz Konde from the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Manika, Director of the Human Resources from the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Good morning, Chair Members. My name is David Yan, Director of Education and Training.
Good morning, Chair and Members. My name is Sibongi Mwabe, Head of Office Ministry. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Bule Ivanovem. I intern with the Department of Education and Training.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Marco Schmidt. I'm from the German Consulate General in Cape Town.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Dina Ume in the Office of the DG. No one the Huffman here or in the Ministry.
Good morning, Chair. My name is John, representing the Adult Learning Network.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Kabelo Mope. I'm representing the Adult Educators Progressive Union for Northwest.
Morning, Chair. My name is Dan Soma. I'm representing Adult Education Progressive Union, General Secretary from the Eastern Cape.
Morning, Chair. My name is Michael Dalinja Mokaz, the National Chairperson of Adult Education Progressive Union, the Eastern Cape.
Morning, everyone. I am Tuli Lema Pumuro, KZN Chairperson from Kabialengan.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Eiffel Bock, also known as Umbuzi, from the Public Servants Association. Yeah, I've got the German version of Umbuzi.
To themselves. This is the moment, starting from you, Rowena.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Rowena Fortein. I'm the Study Group Secretary in Higher Education and Training. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Izim Sekonde, Research of the Committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Pumola Corella. I'm the Parliamentary Officer in the Office of the Director General.
Dumi Majoni, I'm Committee Assistant, Parliament.
Moveni, Minare Renilwe Ndodensha, Neil Newman. I'm from the National Education, Health and Adult Workers Union, Yahoo.
My name is Elijah Mohlola. I'm from Parliament's Communications Unit.
Morning, I'm Alison Romani from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Government. So everybody is here. So you're all welcome. I'm looking forward to your constructive and meaningful engagement. This is the moment we have
going to make full use of it and make sure that indeed we come up out of this meeting with quality outcome of the meeting. Outcomes that will assist in taking the department in this very area of work to greater heights. We will then proceed with our agenda. Please feel free and let's engage without compromising robust engagement where it is necessary. Apologies. I have received two apologies. The Honourable Minister will be with us, but you know, he's going to divide himself between us and the Cabinet. Lucky, but actually I have explained to the committee that I have reported to the chairperson of committees about the complication where the minister is expected to be in two places at the same time. Same applies to the deputy minister. But then, as you can see, where it is really, really necessary that the minister comes here, he will then prioritize us. But then, so you know, Cabinet takes priority in the minister's work. But thank you very much. So these are the two apologies that I received.
Thank you, Chair. We received an apology from Professor Kubisa. He will join us later.
Okay. Professor Kubisa, who is a member of the committee, will join us later. All right. Well, then, do we accept the apology?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a procedural matter? Do we accept the apology?
So, if we note the apology.
You note the apology. But my question was, do you accept the apology? May I have anyone propose an acceptance of the apology? The procedure, we can't take even a minute in observing this part of the procedure. Noting and acceptance, these are two, what acceptance and then
I'm not sure that in the rules of parliament there's provision for accepting apologies. I think it's just usually it's noted, but we can check whether that is to be done. I'm not 100% convinced that we should accept or decline it. Thank you.
Every rule is an exception. So there's a hand there, Mr. Tekane. We accept. Any seconder? Because I don't want tomorrow people to say no, we never accept it. And then seconder, I can see this happening seconded. Thank you very much. Shall we proceed? Briefing by the department. Come on in. All right. Any seconder? No, Ms. Suela. So the apology is accepted. I'm not going to allow any discussion on just the apologies. Yeah? I was just observing procedure because it's safe to do things within the parameters of procedure. So that's fine. So we shall then move on to item number 4, briefing to the Department of Higher Education. I take it before that, I have said I will request the Honourable Minister just to give us an overview of where are we in terms of this migration process and also give us a line of march so that we can then assist following that line of march of the committee.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Will you excuse my voice? I don't know when I'm recovering from flu or my problem with my sinusitis, which causes all sorts of complications. But thank you very much, Mme Poso, the chairperson of our portfolio committee, honorable members of this committee, the DG and his team, and the officials from my office, and all the stakeholders who are here. You arrived, in fact, it really is a very good thing for the portfolio committee when discussing such an important matter to also invite stakeholders beyond just the honorable members of the committee. What I'm going to do, because I'm going to leave it to the DG and his team to give the details. As you say, it's just the highlights. Maybe let me say, Chair, that first of all, thanks for your understanding. But I'm going to stretch my being here till around 12 rather than earlier, so that I can be as part of this discussion as much as possible. And I also just want to reaffirm and reassure members of the Portfolio Committee that for me, coming to the Portfolio Committee actually is often one of the highlights of the meetings that I normally attend, because one gets the very necessary feedback that we need, even if it is critical feedback. That is very important. Now, this is a very crucial matter, this one of the migration of other education and training centers and TVET colleges to our department. Now, just a few issues, Chair, that maybe I need to outline up front. And as we normally do, we'll be quite candid and honest around progress we've made as well as challenges that we face. And of course, without lamenting, also share with you what is it that we are doing to try and overcome the challenges that we have. Insofar as the issue, the first matter that you will be getting details on is the question of the budget for running the adult education and training centers as well as the TVET courses. You know, Chair, let me say up front that one of the things that Parliament can help us with is that in the case where, for instance, the President transfers a function from one department to the next, we think that Parliament really needs to play its close oversight role. Because often it's easy for the proclamation to be made, but the processes that have got to be followed there and thereafter sometimes tend to take so long. I mean, proclamation this was 2009, but we are only really going to be able to finalize transfer 1st of April 2015, 6 years later. Now, those are some of the things that we will share with you so that you can be able also to engage, advise, and so on, and ask the necessary questions in appropriate platforms. There has been a squabble over the money that has to be transferred to us from the provinces, for instance. Some provinces say, no, we never had money to run these things, you know. But we are pleased at least to report, and we will be giving you details that after lengthy consultations, the provincial education departments, the provincial treasuries, the FSC, the Finance and Fiscal Commission, regarding the transfer of funds. By the way, in addition, also there have been consultations by heads of departments in the provinces of education, the MECs. At least, we are agreed now with the Treasury as to the amounts, the funds that needs to be transferred after a long process of disagreement as to how much Province A was spending to run these centers. In fact, Chair, there is a big challenge in moving money for institutions to public money, even where it's supposed to be the case. I think it's something the Parliament really has to look very closely into. So we are pleased then to say that the Minister of Finance has communicated the budget transfer to myself through a letter that I received, which was dated 17 October 2014, which is a huge relief. We are, however, consulting further with the Treasury regarding the adequacy of the budget to actually perform the functions, which is the next matter that I just want to touch upon very briefly. The highlights, as I say, you will be getting the details in. Initial indication that the amounts to administer and functions including exams. For the general education and training certificate for adults is significantly inadequate, one says at upfront. However, it would not be in the interest of the sector to delay. There has been a view, as we have been engaging, for instance, to say, why are you taking over this function now if you do not have adequate funds? But to say the function have to be taken over by our department. And in any case, if we leave functions, a function like this not being taken, it's a big hole in our post-school education and training system. In fact, you can't say you have a post-school education and training system without adult education and training being at the center of that. Which is, and also have been concerned, Chair, we are doing this, that if truth be told, you know, we have not, as this government, paid enough attention, if we are to be self-critical, to adult education and training in a manner that this actually deserves. For instance, our own research tells us that, well, information and research, yes, that we have about 300,000 adult learners in the various centers that we're talking about. But estimates are that there are 18 million South Africans who need this, more or less immediately, but can't access it. So it's something that is very, very important. It shows the backlog. Now, we hope we will treat this together with the opposition in that way, and not use it as a political point scoring. You know, it's a challenge that we all have. I want to say that I will be directing the DG to ensure that vital posts in human resources, finance and examinations be advertised early in January 2015 for filling. I'm also requesting the DG and our chief financial officer to use any possible authorized route to ensure that service delivery is not affected. And this includes the reprioritization of the 1.7 billion rand of other in education program funding for managing and administering the function, including exams. This process has been long and complex, but we are determined that we actually deal with it. In fact, Chair, I would say that we've made a lot of progress. I don't mean to come across as if we are saying we haven't made. We've made a lot of progress, albeit uneven. We've done better with TVET colleges than with adult education. It's part of the unevenness. That is why I am quite keen that we move with speed to really ensure that adult education takes its rightful place in our own system. Now, maybe just briefly on intergovernmental relations, also, which is a matter, by the way, that Parliament must, both National Assembly and the NCOP in particular, need to pay attention to this matter of intergovernmental relations. Implementation protocols to manage the transfer of IF and TVET functions from provincial education departments to our departments have been signed between myself and the MSEs, as well as the DG and the heads of departments in the provinces. About 117 provincial support staff in TVET units are seconded to department in terms of the protocols that we have signed. Because we have said, whilst we are finishing the migration and the transfer in the meantime, let's set up these units and let's second some of the staff in provinces who have been working in this area to then assist us in this. But as yet, we do not have complete credible signed off documentation on the post, staff, licensing agreements, lease agreements, personnel and finance files, and movable assets transferring to the department. It's been a very long and complicated process because this requires very serious auditing. I'm pleased not to say the collective agreements for the transfer of TVET colleges, lecturers, or educators and support staff have been agreed with organized labor in the respective bargaining chambers. This is good progress. We're very happy about this. And these agreements have been signed and ratified. The National Implementation Task Team comprising departmental officials, TVET colleges, principals and representatives of organized labor has been set up to oversee the implementation of these collective agreements. And I have given mandate for negotiations on the adult education and training collective agreement. And it will be tabled, I'm pleased to say that, in the Education Labor Relations Council in November. Just a little bit more these are highlights, Chair, on the function shift budget, is that actually, just to put figure here, is that we have only received 10 million of the requested 81 million in the adjustment estimate 2014-15. So we're 71 million short. And this does constrain our work on the transfer function. On TVET College management, we've finished the process. As we say, we've been making some important progress. College management staff were finalized. Remember, some of them had a choice whether they want to move over to us or if they want to remain with their respective provincial education departments. And we expect from 1st April 2013, actually, this management is now 50 principals of TVET colleges, 160 deputy principals, plus CFOs. We have already, of course, taken over the appointment of management staff in colleges in order to ensure that those who are appointed are the kind of people we need for the kind of new TVET college that we're planning for. The one other matter that the provinces have been managing for us on TVET colleges is actually PESA, the administration of PESA. They've been doing it on our behalf, but now this ends on the 31st of March. The staff that will be transferred now will be in our department. We do appreciate, by the way, the cooperation of all the provinces in this regard, which has helped us that we have to build capacity, because also on our side, apart from budgetary constraints, we need to build capacity to be able to manage these 50 FET policies, something that we have not been doing. As at the end of August this year, there were 19,821 TVET college lecturers and support staff that are likely to be transferred to our department. The final number will be determined by the class team, as I have said, and we hope to complete this by the end of this month. In total, 20,948 TVET staff at provincial and college level are likely to be transferred to the department. Adult education and training, as at end of August 2014, there are 18,213 adult education and training educators and support staff that have been identified for transfer in about 3,150 adult education and training centers. A total of 350 adult education and training support staff have been identified in provincial and district offices of the provincial education departments. In total, there is about 18,563 adult education staff transferring to the department. When combined with the TVET college staff, the total number of staff transferring to the department is estimated at just over 38,000 chairperson and honorable members. So it's going to be a huge growth in numbers now in terms of staff in the department. Movable assets I will leave for now as well as immovable. I'm sure, DJ, you will be able to, with your team, to talk a bit more about that, as well as matters relating to ICT. We are doing a lot of work on ICT and connectivity as well as other matters. Let me conclude by just highlighting a few things. Also, as maybe part summary, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we are engaging Treasury very seriously around the inadequacy of funds. And this, by the way, will include office accommodation, which is a challenge. We can't enter into these agreements because we'll be receiving staff that will remain in provinces. Because, Chairperson, it's very important that much as these functions become national, but we must remain closer to the ground. So it's going to be very important that we have provincial offices. So that, but provincial offices, by the way, will not only be dealing with adaptation and training and technical and vocational education, they will be dealing with everything that is DHET, including matters that may link to NSFAS, matters that relate to the CITAS. Our offices must deal with everything at provincial level and be coordinated in such a manner that we are able to act effectively from the center. We will need, just by way of example, as I move towards conclusion, on how important this matter is. You know, we've actually started a very important initiative of training university council members, and we are doing it provincially. They themselves said that it's easier to do that, and it's also giving them an opportunity for universities to know each other from the same region, for instance, something that we hadn't thought of, because sometimes we tend to think of universities as islands, and this is actually having very positive impact, and it's something that is very important, just illustrates the importance of our offices. And to say that that's not going to be about this. But nevertheless, we are moving into, we are requesting provinces to house us for now until we are able to get our funds to be able to lease our offices. So, I just thought that these are some of the highlights, Jack, which the DG won't repeat, but will give details when necessary. Just to give a sense of where we are. We are very proud, though, that as a department we have reached the stage that we have reached, despite the challenges that we still face. We think that we are a living department now. It's a very important part of our Africa. It's being felt everywhere in terms of the work that it is doing. Yet we are only 6 years old. We are very proud of that. We hope that we will be able to march further together with yourselves to actually strengthen the department more. And particularly in this area, which is such a crucial component of post-school education and training. Thank you very much, Honorable Jefferson.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. And we now allow the DG to come in and give us more information. Indeed, there is a big challenge has been painted to strengthen the teacher. So, over to DG.
No, thank you very much, Chair. The subject matter we are dealing with today is highly loaded in the sense that there are constitutional and legislative processes of it that we need to stay to in relation to moving the funds from the provinces to national. So on the other hand, there are system processes which in the main will not be figuring in this presentation because our focus is more on moving the function from the provinces to national with all its intricacies. But perhaps by way of emphasis, what the minister did in both TVET sector as well as IET sector requested AG to take interest in both of these sectors with a view of determining as to how the system is insofar as financial management and how is it structured across the country. When it comes to adult education and training, the recommendation of the AG is that we should not transfer this function with effect from April 2015 because of the dire situation that it is at the present moment. But through engagement and posing a serious question as to if they are left where they are at the present moment, what will enable them to improve? So we agree together with the Auditor General that there seems to be nothing. And through engagement, then we agreed that no, we'd rather take that risk and responsibility to move them over and we work towards improving them. So I think it's important to foreground that process, especially from the institution of the Auditor General. We give a background and the progress to date in regards to the function shift. But a sticky issue, it's more around the principle of funds follow function. We thought it's something that is going to be easy, but to release monies that you have been managing, it proved not to be an easy thing, as the minister has indicated. We'll go straight now to the presentation without wasting any time, and I'll ask Feroz to lead us in that team as a project leader in this area. Thanks.
Thank you very much, DG, Minister. Honourable members, the presentation is going to look at specifically around the legal and administrative matters around the function shift, or as the Portfolio Committee calls it, migration process. So firstly, just some background in progress on key milestones, issues of transfer of staff, some challenges and risk, and next steps and required actions. So in regards to the background, I think we must have spoke about the presidential proclamation in 2009, 1st of July, moving the responsibility and assigning the functions. And the difference between assigning the function, as the teacher indicated, and the actual shifting of the function, because shifting of the function means legal and administrative processes, including funding. A number of legislative amendments were made by Parliament, the Higher Education and Training Amendment Laws 2010, where there were just technical adjustments by changing the name in the legislation, Department of Education, to Department of Higher Education and Training, Minister of Education to Minister of Higher Education and Training. Then we had the Further Education Training Colleges Amendment Act that was assented to in 2012, but went through the parliamentary process in 2011. And what this legislation really did was to begin to assign responsibility. Wherever there was MEC, it was changed to Minister. Wherever there was a responsibility for the department, it was changed to Director General. But I must emphasize that in the transitional measures to the legislation, while the Amendment Act was assented to, those clauses relating to actual responsibility, for example, the appointment of deputy principals, the management of funds, would only be triggered by the release by the Minister of dates by with those clauses. So in fact, that legislation is not yet fully in effect. There are essential parts such as the employment of principals, deputy principals, but the employment, for example, of lecturers are still based where they are. The management staff for FET and AID are still based where they are until the minister has funds in his hands so that the DG can implement, then those particular clauses will be lifted. The minister has now published recently all the clauses in regards to that amendment act coming into effect on the 1st of April 2015. Further, the 2013 FET Amendment Act allows the whole revamping and restructuring of the adult education and training legislation, which is absolutely significant, because the Adult Education and Training Act, which is still in operation, will cease to exist on the 31st of March 2015. And that was the role of the President, who by proclamation in August released some of those particular sections. So that also is double-barreled, except that it is not the Minister that releases the date, it's the President by proclamation. So, for example, in establishing a community college, those powers are already with the Minister. But on the 31st of March, and the proclamation is on its way, for the final proclamation from the President to bring into effect FET Amendment Act 2013, which will abolish the FET Act and replace it with the Continuing Education Training Act. We must also say that formally and legally, the colleges are now, CVET colleges, in law. And on the 1st of April, we have community colleges. So that has been a particular process. One other issue is that in 2009, there was also the 18th Constitutional Amendment, which would have been much easier if that was done. But constitutional processes take much more longer, amendments take much more longer than what do legislative ones. So there is that particular process, but it doesn't affect the function shift. We then, there is a timeline which I'm not going to go into detail, Chairperson. The Minister spoke about the protocol, that was in terms of the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act, so I'm not going to go into that. So that's all the background that has happened and I spoke to. I can now go to slide 6. What are the processes or the key milestones? In regards to finance, we've gone through a number of consultation processes with HEDCOM. We finalized the functional budget for 2014-15, and that's the funds we require this year to be able to run the function next year. The Minister has spoke to that we only received 10 million. We've had intensive consultation with National Treasury, with provincial education departments through a number of particular structures. There has been handed out a functional structure in terms of the way that we administer the particular process, with the support of the Minister as head in terms of political leadership, then the structures of Council of Education Minister, the Director General, and going down. It is a one-pager that's circulated, and all the various project teams and sub-project teams in terms of dealing with this particular issue. I think part of the problem is as departments we don't deal with functions just every day. It's probably once in a 5-year issue, and I think the Minister has highlighted the legislative lacuna in regards to how to deal with substantive matters between spheres of government. Because, you know, notwithstanding the legislation, all the protocols, I'm talking about the FET Act, all the protocols, there is just no movement in regards to be able to. And that is a role in terms of the Constitution, both in terms of Section 100, where it deals with the powers of provinces, enabling legislation is required to empower that Constitution of a particular person. And I think the Minister's spoke about that. But that's the responsibility of OCTA, DPSA, and you know, those administrative organs of state that have to particularly drive that particular processes. But notwithstanding that, we have finally dealt with the consultation process, although not with, as in many cases of divorce, not with full cooperation, but at least with consultation. On the next slide, we're talking about still the resourcing particular issue, and we have to live with what we have in terms of funding. The Minister of Finance has made a determination. That goes through parliamentary process, etc. There's nothing we can do to change that because it's a parliamentary process. However, The Director General and the Minister has actually given now a directive that the Director General will have to use all these powers in regards to ensuring that there are shifting of funds to be able to ensure that we continue with that. And also the welcome news is that we should be starting filling some of the major administrative posts from the 15th of January. So that's progress, work in progress. In terms of the legal matters, I'm not going to refer to that at all. It's on this particular slide in terms of what has been achieved. In regards to legal, I've already summarized that issue of the presidential proclamation being awaited. That red block is what the minister alluded to. In other words, the protocols are signed, but the annexes to the protocols, which lists that these are the people, these are the personal numbers, these are the identity numbers, has not been forthcoming. However, the good thing is once funds move over, which has happened, the ball is now in the court of provinces, and whatever they give us, provided they don't exceed the budget, is what we will have to particularly accept. So, Minister, if you give us five names, when they should first give us 100, it's fine. We'll have 95 vacancies, and we have five bodies coming over. But the issue is that those. But we have to conclude those annexes because that is subject to order by the Auditor General in terms of how we move particular functions. In terms of human resource management and labor relations, again, the Minister has spoken about collective agreements. That's the detail, Chairperson. I'm not going to go through and read through this particular processes as well as the AS. What we've been doing at the moment is that fortunately the law, that's the Amendment Act, gives the Minister the power to establish the post. And he doesn't have to go through a lengthy process regarding normal departmental establishments of posts to the Public Service Act. Because the law raises these people in this. You know, you can't get approval to say, must create the post. We have to create the post. So the Minister has the power to establish those particular posts so that physical people can be transferred into that. So that has been finalized, both in terms of the management staff that are coming over, to the unit, as well as the administrative support. So the Minister will be sending those so that we can start filling them by February. And then the finalization of regional offices that the Minister spoke about, and then in regards to milestones as we continue. So the financial staff, the provincial visits, etc. have been done. We're working very profusely now with our provincial colleagues in regards to the transfer of files. That's about 38,000 files from colleges in from provincial education departments. So number one is we will have to place an order, I suppose, next week for filing cabinets to house those 38,000 files as we get trucks to move those particular files. And then personnel has to be activated. And here we fast-tracked to National Treasury because these personnel and IT stuff take up quite a long time. Because I have to indicate to you that while provinces are on personnel and nationals are on personnel, they operate from an IT point of view in terms of five different bureaus. So the IT connections are that they don't all come into one particular system. So we have to get these five bureaus where the provincial personnel are sitting and be able to move into national. But that's where we rely on CETA around it. But we have a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, and a plan D in terms of dealing with those particular issues, because that's the highest priority to ensure that people get paid come 1st of April 2015. Now, on the numbers. We broke our budget requirements up into what we call three phases. Phase one is for this financial year, of which we required, and phase two is in this financial year, where we required the 13 million and 67 million, which is just over 80 80 million rands. And this is to go through the adjustment estimates process. And we're only able to get 10 million. Now, to give a practical example, Chairperson, you know, all the costs of this delegation that is here today would have been our normal functioning in terms of the higher education and training functions. But we're here today as a cost center that is related to this particular function shift. So there has been massive reprioritization within the department to give priority to this particular. So even the provincial visits that colleagues made, that 10 million rand is going to go a long way to relieve some of the pressures. The phase 3 budget is the one that I'll come to, and that is in terms of 2015-16 financial year. Again, on the next slide, we got Stevens, college management. The minister summarized it at a very high level. Here are the details in terms of the transfer of the principal, the quoting line, the administration of the personnel budget, staff appointments. So, for example, on Saturday, after I leave the presidential process, we are going to Eastern Cape College to be able to interview for principal and deputy principal post. So those are a number of what used to be provincial functions that we are already managing, because the appointment of staff and governance structure is already with the minister, but not the funds. Then in terms of the size of provincial unit staff, if I can just explain, in the provincial administration at head office and at the regional or district offices, there are staff who support the professional support of FET colleges. There are 117 posts that have been identified. Those are the list that we want the names and ID numbers so that we can begin to move them. And ministers have been asked to create those posts. The second has been spoken to, so has the reporting line. Very, very quickly then on to slide 16. The rest of agreements have been spoken about. Mr. Atkinson's done a better job. You get more detail than I'm able to give. But I think all the detail is in writing. And so the number of posts, I think I can just move over to the table on the overview next up. This is the number of principals, deputy principals, CVET unit staff, lecturers, that's 20,148, and the next slide will give us the same type of information in terms of AN. And the next slide is just the total of the two. On slide 21, the overview of ICT arrangements, part of the issue with ICT is we would have loved to have been ready up and running at the moment, connected. But I indicated to the issue of bureaus on personnel, but the other IT particular issues is around working with fitness. The problem is that in terms of our supply chain processes, you cannot advertise or go out on tender or procure a service if you cannot show that you have the budget. So that's one of those issues that we'll have to deal with through the financing arrangements within special appropriations or adjustment appropriations and how it's to work. So that will be the conundrum. We move on 1st April 2015, but the rigidity of the fiscal situation is that you can, on an authorized basis, only move on the 1st of April 2015. So CETA would not accept a service order to even go investigate if they don't see the DG producing the money or showing where the money is. However, now that the letter of the Minister of Finance is here, that's absolutely vital because that is the legal basis in which we can now begin to start very honestly with our procurement issues because now there is a paper trail. In regards to assets and liabilities, now the assets that we're talking about are desks, for example, those 500 official sets. Some people say it's the desk, the little carpet, the waste paper basket, in the stand where you hang your coat. So those actual physical assets will have to move and they're dependent on the accommodation that we particularly receive. The same issue securing accommodation. Public Works would not take an order from the DG in terms of finding accommodation or even going out of tender or searching for accommodation until they can get from the DG that there is budget. So Public Works says they take about 18 months to be able to find accommodation. So the order will be going, has gone out to Public Works in terms of a search for physical space in the provinces. In the meantime, we will leave the movable assets where they are under the care of officials that would have now been appointed by Minister not second anymore and accommodated by the provincial education department. Then the final consultant of the process has been very long and arduous, but it culminated in the letter from the Minister of Finance. Those are all dates. I'm not going to go through 23, nor 24. Those are details. Now, on 25, slide 25. These are the challenges from 2009-10 that we had around trying to get agreement. And Jefferson, trying to get agreement with 9 MECs and 9 provincial accounting officers, that's 18, Minister and the DG, there's 20 different authorities, is a difficult particular task. And that's why we had to resort. We had to first try to get agreement, which we failed by October. Beginning of October, we failed. Minister informed the Minister of Finance that we tried everything they could put, but we can't get agreement. And so, therefore, the Minister of Finance, under the PFMA regulations, made a determination. And clearly no party will probably be happy, but at least the determination gives us the ability to move forward. So, I mean, if we look at October 2013, now, we don't have to worry about getting this information anymore because the Minister of Finance has made a determination. But three, if you just go to the previous slide, three of the provinces have still not, in spite of the CFO going out, provided inputs. But just to give you an indication of relativeness, our very conservative estimate around what it would cost to administer the function was 492 million deferred TVET only. The inputs we received from provinces was 163 million rand. On the next page, we will now look at the consultative processes with TVET and AET. Now, if you look at the provincial program structure, program 1 is what they spend on administration. Program 9 is what they spend on examinations. And provinces have revealed or declared the following amount. Now, if you look at the Northern Cape, for example, although the province is small, they spend only 2.4 million rand in terms of managing the FED function, inspectors, re-examinations. That is what they've declared. And we know that they will not be able to fund more than 7 posts. Northwest and the Limpopo hadn't provided the information, but this is just the CFO's high-level visit with CFOs to be able to show, again, what provinces have indicated. Program 5 and Program 6 are the big ones, and they're the big money, but you need the small money to be able to manage the big money. And the small money is in examinations and administration. But if you look at Program 5 and 6, that is the conditional grant of direct transfers to FET colleges, and Program 6 is the 1.7 billion rand in regards to adult education and training. So the rate is what's said. On 27, the net of allocation by the Minister of Finance, you will notice that we said actually FET and AX was somewhere in the vicinity of 900 million. But TVET alone was, our estimation was 492 million. Totally, the Minister of Finance has now allocated to us 283 million, plus the 70 million for examinations. If you look at the line at the bottom, that's 360 million rand, which is far below the TVET only in terms of our calculation, and very, very much far below both the AX and the FET. Just to give you an example, the AX examination It is the GECC for grade 10 level for adults, and there's 300,000 that have to be registered, papers have to be printed, the papers have to be distributed. So there's a massive logistical system behind it. And those logistical systems are not managed directly by professional staff dealing with AS. You have your traffic advisors, you have your district officials who get into their cars, drive through, deliver those papers. Then you have to get appoint markers to be able to mark those papers. So that's a pressure point, and the minister has indicated now to the DG that we will have to reprioritize to ensure that those essential functions continue. Now, we all understand the side of the province where an official spends 10% of their time on examination and another 90% of their time maybe in schooling, that you can't wrench that 10% out. So there is that particular issue that we will have to manage. So just the appointment of markers alone comes up to much more than 70 million rand. So we're not talking about the printing and the delivery and the logistics. But Chairperson, again, we're saying that the letter from the Minister of Finance really puts in place the grease and the fuel into the machinery to start. So, in summary, on page 28, just to give an example, and this is not the Spanish provinces because they are in the same financial difficulties. The total provincial education budget for education is 186 billion rand. What they spent on program 1 and 9 for their school functions, the EDA, AET, and FET, is 16.6 billion rand. And what we have got now from the Minister of Finance is 407 million, which is 2.4% of what the PED spent on Program 1 and Program 2. The idea in terms of project management would have been 5%. So one can see that we're operating comfortably at half the particular cost. But Jefferson, we are again thankful for the letter from the Minister of Finance, and we will work within what we have because we must make it work. On slide 30, there's critical tasks that are delayed, but we have plans A, B, and C. The one is the capacity to load TVET college. The TVET employees that are the five allotted provinces have to be loaded onto Purcell. So we're making a number of contingencies, including outfitting in our building computers and bringing staff to begin to do all that capturing, using colleges and the college capacity to do that. We've also indicated to provinces, and we've indicated to them, that they have a lot of vacancies around the equity administrative posts that are not filled, and that there is money in the budget for them to appoint temporary, part-time, overtime particular employees to help with that particular method of work. And we've got a whole plan around that. Regional office, we will be asking provinces, we will be asking them to continue housing them. We will ask them to continue housing them until we find accommodation. Minister, we're not going to ask for permission because we'll never get a response. So we'll just say, please keep them there until we get them properly accommodated. And then the IT. So now, what are the next steps on 31? We're still going to pursue the protocols, but however, we are not at a disadvantage anymore because the protocols were required to determine the resource allocation. Now that that is done, we need the protocols to be able to implement. So like I indicated, before the money was allocated, it would be good to have found out every single function that was performed by every single person so that we can allocate the money. Now we will have to do is to just accept what the provinces tell us, providing they don't go over that particular budget of 107. So that would be one way of managing those. Because there's no way we can get more people than what the 407 million can cover. So that's the protocols. And so we slide 32. There are some very technical matters such as leave, liabilities related to staff, leave credits, etc., that has to be done would prevent our cooperation. So those are staff benefits, regional offices. So, in conclusion, the way forward, I think we're still pursuing at leadership, political, and accounting officer level, that's still being pursued. But at on the ground, we are ready and fired to particularly move in regards to dealing with the function job. So come what may, 1st of April 2015, will be when total and full accountability is handed over to the Minister and the Director General. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you so much for the presentation. Honourable members, I'm not going to allow a discussion at this stage, but I want to allow members a holistic view of the progress made in the migration process of the TVS and AETs to the Department of Higher Education and Training, by allowing the stakeholders to also do a presentation. And when all the stakeholders have briefed us, we can then engage in a holistic discussion on the migration process. Are we in agreement? Are you happy with this approach? All right. Thank you very much. I will then request the Adult Education Progressive Union to give us their presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
The presentation was circulated.
Yes. Honorable Minister of the Department of Higher Education and Training, Honorable Members, colleagues, and fellow comrades from various unions representing adult educators. My name is Michael Dalinjebongomogazi, the National Chairperson of the Adult Educators Progressive Union, a newly registered union of higher educators, in bold letters, higher educators. I'm not going to repeat various preambles underpinning this whole establishment, as the Minister has already done that, but I'll just shoot to the challenges. Not shooting the challenges for the purpose of staying on the other side of the river, throwing stones to the department, because this is not what we believe in as this union of higher educators, but rather we believe that we should work together to achieve and realize this objective of transforming the adult education sector. I fully agree with Minister that the IS sector has been neglected and marginalized for a long time. Anyway, we are very worried as this organization that should the minister be taken to another ministry. It will be a big blow to adult education, because at least a little bit illiterate in issues of so I'll appreciate your appointment in this ministry, because we know at least we'll be moving forward. In 2009, the then Department of Education was split into two, the Department of Higher Education and Training and the Department of Basic Education. This split made IAT a function of the Department of Higher Education. But the current status quo in the provision of adult education and training across province is very diverse and is not contributing to the realization of the constitutional mandate to provide basic education to adults in South Africa. We believe the standardization of the conditions of services for higher educators in all provinces will be fast-tracked to ensure stability in the sector. It should also be noted that the Adult Educators Progressive Union fully supports the latest developments and strides taken by the department to transform Park Adult Learning Centers into community learning centers and the transformation taking to community colleges. This will ensure that the following objectives are realized. One, building of a democratic society. Adult learners contributing very much in issues affecting their lives is the realization of the objective of building a democratic society. Saving and development of the local economy.
making the adults to understand the world of science and technology. Honorable Minister, I'm very moved when I'm moving in rural communities, observing and noticing that adult educators, adult learners are able to use computers and are even able to use old software called Pater that are sometimes introduced by other organizations like Vodacom, empowering our community to use the ICT to do small, medium, and micro enterprises. And this role of adult education, the role that is being played by adult education in empowering these communities, should be noted here in this house. And the provision of relevant skills to boost the local economies is one of the objectives of adult education in this country. Without wasting time, I just want to shoot direct to the challenges and the proposals that the adult education progressive union is putting forward to ensure that there is progress in this whole issue of migration. The PPPTs were formed in different provinces in 2012 to drive the migration of early colleges to DGT. Stakeholders from higher were brought on board in order to be capacitated to be able to deal with their own migration when time comes. These structures were abandoned, Honorable Minister, by various provinces because the focus was much more on elite colleges. The white paper on both school education and the report by the ministerial task team called for the formation of community colleges. It was further commended that the function should be shifted from provincial education department to DHT. For the FET colleges, PPPTs were actively engaged and disseminated required information to the stakeholders on time. The present IET directorate in provinces seemed to undermine the importance of these structures. As the union will comment the following, the revival of PPPTs in all provinces to deal specifically with migration of IET, because more focus is on FET colleges. Structures and stakeholders that have interest in adult education as well as structures that represent adult education, both formally and non-formal structures, should form part of the P2T. Piloting center managers should be tasked to coordinate these structures since the settlement of provincial and district staff is not guaranteed. Terms of reference for these P2Ts should be clearly defined. There is also an issue of the matter of public adult learning centers. And there is a draft policy around measuring of public adult learning centers, which is in regulation right now. Measuring of centers should be informed by local demographics. If you take, for example, the KZN and its demographics, it's not like the Gauteng and the Limpopo and Eastern Cape. So demographics should be considered, especially when allocating resources for the establishment of community colleges and the implementation of all the programs, especially at local levels. And local stakeholders should be utilized during the measuring process. I'm worried when I'm talking about this measuring process because I understand the issue of demarcations in local municipalities in our areas. An area in Tabanguru called Mtwekre past Mount Frey to travel 120 kilometers would be sick. Because when the demarcation committee was doing its work there, he didn't consider the issue of demographics and issues of putting people close to where they live, resources close to where they live. Each province, district, and local area is unique in defining its community. Measuring process should be done during the opening of the academic year to avoid inconveniences that might be caused by the process. We're enabling in KZN, with the Department of Education there, the head of department, where people were to travel 50 to 60 kilometers to write examinations. Remember, adult education examinations are conducted afternoon. They started 2 to 5. Right now they are writing. Just imagine a person has to travel 50 kilometers away from home to the nearest center afternoon. These are the things we usually not consider when transformation is happening.
We are really appealing to the department to consider these issues in this area of migration. The current administration in provinces, the administration of IS and migration in provinces and the Tshilava is associated with a lot of resistance from officials because of the uncertainty and insecurities. Other directors and key officials have opted to remain in the DPE, and they are silent with their choice, with their option of choice. In such conditions, they are not proactive on migration issues, thus causing further delays. Some have abandoned their responsibilities and do not have sufficient time to assist in migration. As the union will propose the following, the piloting center managers should be tasked to coordinate migration issues in their respective provinces. They should intensify and revise difficulties intended to quiet migration, to be specific. Facilitate the establishment of local transitional committees who will be tasked to consult central government bodies and other local structures to prepare for migration. Here we don't want to see a situation where education is more centralized, because the recent proclamations and indications adult education must be a societal issue. In fact, education and training. We propose that the piloting center managers should consult interdepartmental structures at local level, non-governmental organizations and other role players in order to facilitate the establishment of community learning centers, as they will be in need. There will be a need for sharing of resources for infrastructural needs in the beginning. We understand adult education is running a shortage of resources. Currently, schools are conducted in the mainstream school classes, and most of the time, they find themselves being knocked out by the principals, and adult education is suffering a lot. That's why you can identify that there are more people who are still illiterate in this country. It's because adult education is not accessible. One, because of the issues of budget, as indicated before, and the allocation of resources to create an enabling environment for adult learners to receive their constitutional right to basic education. Piloting center managers should coordinate regular public adult learning centers at least in February 2015. They're in a better position, those piloting center managers, with a lot of experience and understanding the demographics, especially local levels. They understand what is happening there, and they can assist a lot, those piloting center managers, instead of those people who are not quite sure whether they will be moving to the Department of Higher Education. Issue of the Okavra. In some provinces, IS does not have designated officials. The districts are poorly resourced and dysfunctional. There is no proper monitoring and support. The rate and fund posts for SESs and DCSs are not filled, or where filled are used as a dump site for displaced officials within the department. As that we have been observing, and real, this has detrimental effects in the carrying and fulfilling of the departmental mandate to eradicate illiteracy and develop skills for South African leading masses. The department should look at seconding the current IELTS educators who have had skills in various disciplines within IELTS. These range from expertise in item development, marking and moderation processes, administration of examinations, liaising with different stakeholders at various levels. Deployment of these educators in these positions will not have major budgetary implications, as they will be seconded with their current notches for the time being, whilst the conditions of this issue is being dealt with in the following chamber. This temporal settlement should facilitate migration issues at local level, consult CGPs and SCPs, and intergovernmental structures in order to lobby for resources for temporal accommodation of district-based learning centers, whilst the minister is still working with pilot community colleges and the issue of infrastructure is not yet finalized.
There is also an issue of conditions of services for IELTS educators. The conditions of services for IELTS educators vary from province to province. The migration brings about mixed feelings, uncertainty and insecurity to most of educators across provinces. Based from these experiences, the center once experienced a lot of a massive exodus of educators to mainstream education in search of graduate studies. We don't want here to repeat the same when we are moving and are migrating to DGT. The current IELTS educating fraternity is in possession of qualifications and vast experience necessary to realize the departmental objectives. They have accumulated a lot of experience in adult learning and teaching, which will be meaningful in the university community learning center. They should be redeployed according to their skills in various community learning centers. The department will consider not employing external personnel to vacant posts given the current budgetary constraints, but utilize the existing expertise and experience accumulated by educators over the number of years of loyal service to the department and the sector. Also, ongoing professional development of IELTS educators will be considered in order to professionalize the sector. The draft conditions of services for IELTS and TVT and the TVET lecturers will be finalized in order to achieve stability within the sector. The current employment conditions of IELTS educators, if utilized, will accumulate liability for the DHET. As in most provinces, 37% salary adjustment in lieu of the benefit has not been made. Most educators do not even enjoy the leave entitlement. There is an issue of funding. The draft policy calls for funding norms for community colleges during the transitional period from provincial education departments to DHET to be the funding concession as currently in operation in this office. Again, on this aspect, there are huge variances from province to province. IELTS centers are not adequately resourced and funded. Funds are only shifted to do other activities not related to adult educational training. We therefore recommend that funds allocated for the program should be reversed to avoid shifting. Involvement of stakeholders at local level. We support the call by the Minister of Higher Education and Training in terms of Section 41A and B and 41C A and M of the Federal Education and Training Colleges Act of 2006, Act Number 16, the intention of consulting standard governing bodies and informal governance structures in fulfilling the function of center governing bodies on the conversion and maker of adult learning centers. We further recommend that the local stakeholders should be strongly utilized during the process of establishing this community college. They will further ensure involvement of all the stakeholders concerned in the decision making and make education and training a societal issue. In conclusion, Honorable Minister, we believe that if some of the proposals mentioned above are affected or modified to fit the current changes within the sector, we will see a turnaround in the adult education and training in this country. Thank you, Honorable.
Well, thank you so much for the presentation coming from the Adult Education Progressive Union. I will now call upon the representative of Adult Learning Network to brief us.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Minister, Honourable Members, thank you for the opportunity. On behalf of the Adult Learning Network, we would like to express our support for the migration process. We also would like to indicate to you that we are fully behind the Minister and his Ministry in terms of the changes that they want to see implemented. It's been a long time coming. And as a sector, while today is about the migration and the progress report, my feedback will focus on that rather than other matters that might have been raised by a colleague before me. We call for the speedy implementation of the migration minister. If we can find ways of fast-tracking, we should find ways of fast-tracking. Because it's with a frustrated sector that we would wish not to allow to get to further frustration. And we appreciate the fact that under the Department of Higher Education, all our concerns will be heard rather than having to speak to various provincial departments, which made the implementation of various conditions of service problematic over the last 10 to number of years. And that being said, we call for a better coordination within the sector when it comes to the Department of Higher Education and having that responsibility, where the coordination between the sector and various stakeholders should become evident through most probably setting up a forum where the AET sector is represented and the concerns are catered for. The AON looks forward to the implementation and to be part of the new landscape of an inclusive and integrated post-school and education and training sector, because that is missing currently. But we see where the ministry and the department is heading towards. We will provide comments on the draft policy on the CETCs, as well as other policies that are currently in the public domain. Madam Chairperson, I have only a few questions related to the actual presentation and one comment.
Do you want to interrogate? Is it yours or...?
By the Department of Higher Education.
Okay. I would like to leave that for discussion. Under discussion, there will be clarification questions allowed and also going straight to a discussion. You will be allowed to respond. Thank you very much. So you're done.
Thank you, Madam.
For now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. What a delegation of three. Seated next to me is Mr. Zilavazi, and seated next to him is Dr. Faraz. My name is Dan Mobilakur. I'm the current acting chairperson of the Federal Christian Training Colleges Employers Organization. Chair, as we started, we appreciate the opportunity that you have given us to address you and the honorable members. And therefore, I want to say all protocol observed. Our introduction is well clear that colleges support migration of staff, and they are fully cooperating with the Department of Education and Training. Even though there are problems, because we understand the social support, understand the transformation agenda of the country, and therefore we want to be party to that. However, say there are problems that colleges are experiencing. I'll just go straight to the problems as per the invite that you must talk from the perspective of private colleges. One issue that we are grappling with as colleges is the issue of low staff morale. Staff members who are not going to the DSET are highly motivated by the exclusion and uncertainty in terms of their employment. The majority of staff members that is going to the DSET department are in solidarity with their colleagues who are not migrating, and I think, Chair, that is only natural. Staff members who are in the payroll of colleges are paid at a total cost package as that of mid managers and senior managers. Their home take is higher, and now the state will defer the statutory deduction, and the home take salary will be severely reduced. They are not keen to migrate as a result of that. Their morale is too low as well. This will have a negative impact in the results of colleges in this academic year. The second problem that I will share is TVET colleges in rural areas. Colleges that are above 3% threshold are not able to access funding from other sources. because of the survival of economies in these areas. There is no plan that we are aware of to support them in order to keep the experienced personnel they have. Therefore, they are facing a tragedy of small budgets, excess staff, and increasing numbers of students. Another issue, Chair, is skill centers. Skill centers were attached to colleges for the amalgamation process, but have not been funded because of the nature of courses they offer, which is short courses, and they are not included in the program-based funding. This has resulted in colleges being above the threshold. These causes cannot be eliminated in colleges because they make colleges to be responsive to the needs of the community. There should be a way to ensure that these centers are funded and sustained as they encourage economic activities in those communities. Problem zero number four is the ideal organogram of the Teams College. There is no ideal organogram that has been established in Teams Colleges by the Department of Education or by Education and Training that we are aware of. Colleges have had different organograms in different provinces and are staffed as such. That has resulted in exceeding the threshold, and this has to be looked into. Because here, when we're dealing with the question of equalization of staff, we did not harmonize the particular area, and I think it had an impact in colleges being above the threshold. Program area number five, the college day and the college week. The collective agreement relating to regulating the working hours in TVET colleges is 35 hours per week. This is a problem, in that a college day ends in the evening of every working day. The college working hours are far more than what is provided in collective agreement, and therefore you need more staff to service the day. Another fundamental factor is the floor space in colleges. That forces the college to provide reports 191 after NCV. Until you define the day correctly, you will not solve the problem. Another problem here is the college week. The college week starts from Monday to Saturday. These have far-reaching implications for staffing, and that you must have enough staff to carry the week. Mindful of the LRA provisions and overtime payment limits, as well as throughput and certification rates. Future adjustment of baseline funding in some provinces. Some provinces did not adjust baseline funding after the recapitalization process, which has resulted in underfunding in those provinces. This has resulted in colleges exceeding 2-3% threshold. For example, the Honorable Minister of Tanzania directed the tribunal to deal with the shortfall of 1.1 billion rand in KwaZulu-Natal as a result. And of late, we have learned that Northern Cape as well has side problems with KwaZulu-Natal, even though maybe the figures would be proportional to Northern Cape as the smallest province in terms of population in the country. We will propose engaging with the DG in order to get the update on this matter. Program-based funding versus the post-provision norm. The department allocates money as the full-time equivalent and not the cost of the full program. The FET is less than the actual cost of the program, and there is inherent deficit for underfunding in the manner in which we are being funded. A terrible question. Is the program-based funding the same as the post-provision norm? We will appreciate some scenarios to understand this question, because as college counselors would need to be taken through in order to understand that. The other problem says that there is 80-20 split in terms of funding, 80% being the grant by the state, 20% also coming from NSFAS and from parents who would be able to pay. And our main concern as colleges is 20% that is not fully funded. NSFAS funds part of it. There is a big group of students who either qualified for NSPAS but there is no money, or have failed and therefore do not qualify. Both categories are not funded at all in this 20%. Parents who are above the threshold are very few in number to make an impact in terms of payments. However, college is experiencing huge debt year in, year out. And the write off those bad debts, the writing off of such bad debts, has a major impact on the threshold. So I want to sponsor some possible solutions. One is that the migration process must be expedited as soon as possible to bring about stability and certainty. Our experience here is that when staff moved from the department to colleges in 2006, there was such. But after that process was concluded, there was stability and certainty. And we think if this process is expedited, we will arrive at a particular point of stability and certainty. There must be a clear and sustainable support system for colleges in rural areas, as well as small colleges. We think that should be understood because those colleges do not have access to resources like capital colleges. Where campuses have been moved from one province to another as a result of redemarcation, the inheriting college should be given the necessary funding to carry those campuses, EGSI, Tibet College. When Umzimkulu was transferred to KwaZulu-Natal from the Eastern Cape, two campuses that were belonging to Ingwe, Tibet College, were given to the site. And the fund did not follow the function. And that is a problem. And the college is way above the threshold. Four, the portfolio committee should attend to the issue of the baseline funding. That was never adjusted in some provinces after the recapitalization process. This is to be corrected in the current medium-term expenditure framework. Five, skill centers must have clear funding models because they service communities. Six, chair, there should be matching of funding and targets that are met years earlier than set target dates as pronounced by the minister. The 2014 targets were met around 2012 in terms of student numbers. And currently, we are about 800 students to meet 1 million targets in 2019, which will be met around 2015 and 2016 financial years. We are proposing that ring-fence a particular percentage of the employer levies to the skills fund, so as to fund the growth of private colleges. We will deal with the issues, with three issues in the main. Our view is that, one, we need more floor space as the sector is growing in terms of the pronouncements made by the Honourable Minister and the NDP. Personnel is one of the issues, as well as quality throughput. So, Chair, we think that this is our presentation to the Centre.
We are cool for your presentation. I will now move on to the last presentation, which is a presentation by the Public Service Association. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister, Honourable Members of the Committee, and senior management from GFET, as well as comrades from trade unions that I know and have met today. Madam Chair, I'm going to try and keep it short. There is a document on the screen, but I'm not really going to work from it. It is a document that is still in progress. It's not a finalized document. Unfortunately, the PSA only received the department's briefing this morning, so maybe our letter will be aligned a bit. But I'm going to concentrate on two issues, Madam Chair. The department did mention their concerns in respect of budgetary constraints, which the PSA is well aware of. CETO also referred to budgetary problems and funding not filtering through to the colleges. Now, as trade union, there is not much that we can do to address that concern. So we will focus on the staff that will be affected by this transfer, Madam Chair.
Now, there are two categories that the PSA would like to refer to. And the first one is identifying the staff that will be transferred. Now, I was fortunate enough to be part of the negotiation sessions in the bargaining units where the transfer agreement was signed, which both the Honourable Minister and the VP referred to earlier in the discussions. Now, the criteria agreed upon by the parties who signed the transfer agreement were based on the college education versus the wages bill, with a view to make a determination in line with Section 34.4 of the FET College Act 3 of 2012, which states the following. Any lecturer or member of the support staff employed by a public college in a post that is fully funded in terms of the norms and standards on January 2012 must be verified by the Minister as fully funded post, and the Minister must, subject to Section 197 of the Labour Relations Act, transfer those posts to the organisational structure of the department in accordance with the Public Service Act. Now, the agreement also states that if it is established that the ratio of the college allocation versus the wage is 63% or less, then all staff employed at that college should transfer to the DHEP. Now, that is very clear in the collective agreement. But the converse is also then correct. The agreement clearly states that where colleges exceed the 63% ratio referred to, only the positions falling within the 63% will be transferred to the DHET. Now, if you look at that, Madam Chair, then the committee should take note of the following. We have heard the department referring to budgetary problems. We have heard FETCIO referring to that as well. Now, the concern that our members refer to us is what figures will be used to identify that 63%. Currently, the colleges are not receiving the full amount that they should be received to account for all the expenditure. Now, the DHET recently had visited throughout the country. We're busy with the verification process to establish what the spend in the actual wage bill percentage is compared to the college allocations. Now, the PSA has been informed that when those percentages were calculated, they took into account the actual wage bill, compared it to the actual funding, and arrived at the percentage. Whereas the PSA is of the opinion that when that calculation was made, the actual percentage should have been calculated as follows. The actual wage bill should have been compared to the funding that should have been received by the college in order to establish what the spending of that college would have been had they received the correct funding. We are not only talking of positions that is now identified, Manager. We are talking of people sitting in positions. So the PSA's main concern is that we get the clarification as to exactly how that 63% is calculated in order for us not to sit with distorted figures. And to use a simple example, if 21,000 people transferred to DHET, really as 25,000 people should have been transferred if the correct calculations were used. The other concern, Manjie, comes from those employees who will not be transferred as a result of the comments I just made a minute ago. Now, this matter has been discussed at the bargaining units where I had the opportunity to act as a negotiator. And the question has been asked by Labour, not only the PSA, but by organised Labour, is what will happen to those staff that will not be transferred? Now, DHET is on record, and I have minutes here with me, should anybody want to have a look at it. DHET is on record that nobody will lose their jobs. But the unfortunate part is that we would have loved to hear that from Etia, because people who are not going to be transferred will not fall under the scope or jurisdiction of the DHEP, as far as the PSA understand. Fitcher was not willing to indicate, and this is not a personal attack, Madam Chair, please don't see it as such, but Fitcher was not in the position at the last meeting to indicate what will happen to those employees, and in the absence of any communication in that regard, it places Labour in an extremely difficult position. As much as we support the initiative of the Minister of Higher Education, and as much as we support it, these are actual issues that affect people working for the colleges that have to be resolved in order for Labour to also be comfortable with finalising this process. It is one thing, and I can concur with what my comrades and even other speakers have indicated, as a closing note, Madam Chair, we support the process. We would like to see that it be finalised as soon as possible. But please, it is our plea to the committee that it should not be sped up at the behest of employees who are not sure about how the position has been decided on and whether they will be transferred or not. I thank you for the opportunity and the invitation to make this submission. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the presentation. Well, Honourable Members, you've been listening to so many presentations starting from the Department of Higher Education. And at this moment, I want to believe that you now have a holistic view of where the migration process is, but also during the presentations, there were challenges that were highlighted, and I want to believe that you would want to come in now and interrogate all the presentations. But then, I'm not going to confine you to one presentation. Let's zoom into all the presentations once, because I do want the minister also to benefit in terms of the questions that you're asking, so that we sharpen also the thinking of the DG on these matters. So, but then the rules will be, let's avoid pointing fingers at each other. That is going to assist us and assist with the harmonious way in which we engage with one another. And then when we come in or when we arrive, shall please be short and to the point, the mini presentation. So give each other sufficient time and also allow yourself follow-up questions. So if you conduct yourself in this manner in which I'm requesting, you will have enough sufficient time to engage with all the presentations. I will now open this for members to reflect on these presentations. Thank you very much.
Chair, maybe before we start, can I just get a sense, there is another union at work here. Now, can I get a sense, is it organizing in the sector or it's not? You...
Sir, can you please come in and please explain on your presentation here, because I'm saying this because I know that in terms of the briefing, this was not the case. They are not confident that they will be coming. Okay. Now you know, if you had responded on time, you would be appearing on the agenda. But in future, now you know how we want to work with you. We really want to work with you. But you must then cooperate with us as well. So, can we then respond to the question raised by the Honourable Member? Your role. Do you have a role? Do you have a presentation to make? But unfortunately, we will not allow you that. But can you just explain your role? I think that will suffice for now.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. Yes, definitely, we are organizing in the sector. And we believe that we are the majority union in the sector. So, yes, we are organizing in the sector. And we believe that we are the majority union in the sector. But I am the national organizer of the sector. I am ambushed to be here
I'm in another conference, then I joined my fellow comrade who is a researcher in post-schooling. We're just observing.
I think we are happy that you are here, because I am aware of an invite that was sent out to you. We're just happy that you come here. You remember, in participation you do it in many ways. There are many ways of getting a case rather than terminating action. So we're happy that you are here. Thank you very much. Are you satisfied?
Thank you, and thanks to everyone for your presentation. I suppose the elephant in the room really is the fact that there is not enough money to do this transfer. However grateful you might be to the Minister of Finance for actually writing down how little you are getting, it is not going to be enough. And I would like to have some, maybe you can't do it now, but a setting out, point by point, of what is not going to happen as a result of the fact that there isn't going to be enough money. Because this, I mean, to me, institutions are complex ecosystems. And you can hear it in the presentation of the people from the TVET colleges and adult education themselves, that they live in and work in a complex ecosystem of relationships and expectations and historical ways of behaving towards one another and towards their work. And suddenly what's coming in here is a massive change, which seems most people support, and which seems a good idea, but that massive change may, if we're not careful, actually destroy some of the most precious parts of that ecosystem of how an educational institution works. This is of enormous concern, because educational institutions are so precious, and whatever their problems, and there are enormous problems in FET colleges, as Minister rightly pointed out. Once you destroy the ecosystem, that makes it extremely difficult to rebuild. So the presentations were a little difficult to pin down. You know, the mention is made every so often, well, you know, we don't have enough money for this, and we don't have enough money for that, and this isn't being transferred, and that isn't being transferred, and the transfers are being recalcitrant on A, and they're also being recalcitrant on B, and there's a sense here of a process that suddenly on the 1st of April, which is an unfortunate date, 2015, these colleges are going to suddenly be declared DOHT's property, and all of these things are still going to be in limbo, and I fear that there will be a huge backlash and serious damage done to the colleges and to their staff. So that's my first statement, really, but embedded in it really is a sort of question, saying, can you clarify further what you're going to do on the 1st of April 2015 to prevent some of the things that, very worrying things that our colleague has raised here. The second one is, talking about education systems as a complex ecosystem, how the hell, excuse my language, did you come up with $35 a week? I kicked the hands of Fatsu here, not Nahawu, because this is the kind of approach towards teaching that they have, but clearly Fatsu is not in evidence. But this kind of way of thinking of the role of a teacher is just not suitable, if especially in an institution that has evening classes, Saturday classes. I just cannot see it working. They're not going to get more money for more staff. They're not going to get more money for more overtime. So what's going to happen on the 1st of April? Are people all going to be fired? Are classes going to stop in the evenings and on Saturdays? It just seems to me to be a very something. So those are my two questions. There are many smaller sub-questions,
All right, I don't want you to go into
them. Can I ask one or two of them?
No, you'll get another.
All right.
Can I confine everybody to two questions?
Thanks.
So that you can make progress in terms of responses as well. Thank you very much. Next.
The question, every time that it's my turn, I'm confronted with limitations. But be that as it may, let me see if I can combine the one question. I wanted to actually just get a better understanding of the reasons why the department was not successful with the request for this for the current financial year, when the money was requested was 81 million and we only received 10 million for the department. Is there any understanding of why Treasury was so harsh? And linking from that, it appears that there will be some great difficulty to balance the transition process. And Professor Pelloni has actually asked the question, what impact did it have? The second issue is the concern that I have with regards to, because my understanding is that it's basically the administration and clearly the function that moves, but colleges are running. It's now going to be managed from different positions. Yes, there's a merger of some of the staff, etc., and that could be complicated, but my concern is the personal, the amalgamation of different personal systems. Now, has the department now secured a firm commitment from staff to manage that process? Because that is one of the processes that we cannot have with effect from 1 April, that those systems are not talking to each other, and consequently, it will have a huge impact on everybody that needs to pay all their bills going forward. So could I just ask the department about those two matters? Thank you, Charles.
Thank you very much for your question. Next, Mr. Shuela.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for all the presentations. From the presentations, we get a sense of a department that is ready to take over the function come April 2015 amid the challenges like the shortage of funding, but also it's taking over functions from various provinces which operated at different levels. The system that is not in harmony, it's not harmonized, they were not doing the same thing, and other things are coming over to the Department of Higher Education. And also, we're hearing concerns from the parties or the stakeholders in the whole process of their challenges that they were facing in the sector, obviously, because they were not part of the DHET, of their experiences from where they were operating. And from your opening remarks, Chairperson, you did indicate that there were issues of standardization. When you look at the appointment of some staff, you did indicate that some DPT principals were appointed at a higher level, while others were also appointed at a lower level. I just want to know from the Department of Education, of Higher Education, now that you are taking this particular function, what will happen to these kind of employees who are DPT principals but not on the same level? And again, with regard to IET education, Minister, you also indicated, of course, that this sector was highly neglected and there were disparities, particularly on the service of conditions. And what is going to happen to this sector as well? Are you going to try and bring harmony in the sector as well when you eventually take over the function? Thank you.
Thank you for your question, Mr.
Shuela.
Over to you, Mr.
Kasi. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to start off by saying how refreshing it is to have the Minister present.
And I hope that this is an indication of more regular presence with the popular committee and not a special appearance. I'm limited to questions here at the time, so I can do that. Let me speak very quickly, Chair, on the start of my first question, which is centered around the budget shift. And it appears, Chairperson, that this is a case study of a failure or breakdown in intergovernmental relations in the migration process. And I want to get a comment on that, because from the presentation there were some provinces that could not even provide responses. I know North West, Northern Cape, and Mpumalanga were part of them as part of that. And what are the consequences, what are the accountability mechanisms for these provinces that do not cooperate, that do not comply in terms of the relations or the protocols that must take place? Who is being held accountable? How are they being held accountable? And a better explanation on the budget. So that I'm just a little bit unclarified, Chairperson, in terms of the 10 million and the money that needs to shift and the money that the finance minister specifies. What are the actual total amounts? We can just map it out very, very clearly so that I myself can also understand that better. Then my second question, Chair, is linked to the reports from the unions and the employers' organization. Chair, it's a very unhealthy situation currently. From what I pick up, where there are those educators and administration staff that are very insecure in their employment and their futures. It's very, very unhealthy, and I believe what it is costing at the moment is going to negatively impact the culture that we have at our institutions going forward. I want to get clarity on particularly that 63% threshold. So there was a question raised in the last presentation on the way that the calculation was done. Because we've got everyone in the same room, it's much easier from the different stakeholders to get clarity, because I think it's a very simple thing, or maybe it's an interpretation matter, but to get clarity on the calculation. Was this an incorrect calculation that was done in terms of the number of staff being transferred? Were those staff that are being let out of the process, how is this being addressed with those individuals? How are they being communicated with? And exactly how are they going to be dealt with? And the department's quoted comments of nobody will lose their jobs. How is that envisioned practically? Because it's easy to make proclamations, but how is that practically envisioned? And if I were one of those people, what has been communicated to me in terms of what is going to happen? Is that very, very clear? Or is it just because there isn't a budget, we're going to kick that over to provinces, or we're going to say, well, we don't have any recourse, or we don't have any advice in terms of the future going forward? So those are my two questions.
Can rest assured, I counted four in the pool. Oh, 2.1, 2.3. All right, thank you very much. Over to you, Nick Stagman.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My first question is that I just want to know, because during the parliament oversight, it was reported that there is a moratorium that is placed by the department on the TVET colleges not to employ the permanent lecturers. And then I want to check how many vacant permanent posts are available and what is the state of readiness of the appointment immediately after the migration process in April. And then the second one is about the identification of the staff to be transferred from TVET colleges that is to be finalized in November. And then I just want to check, because we are already in the middle of November, how far is the progress?
Well, let me thank all the honorable members for their questions. I will now request the department. Oh my God, okay. Sorry. Honorable Whip, you may come in.
I just want to check with the department if we
in our democracy, in our new democracy, don't we have experience of some sort that we can use to, well, let me rephrase, that can be empower us or give us capacity to deal with this new matter. In 1994, when the Department of Education was divided into maybe white education, black education, education for independent states, and we had to bring, I don't know how many there were, but we had to bring all those together. Doesn't that experience give us some empowerment to deal with this new situation, which is comparatively speaking is relatively, I would imagine, small. So I'm saying that experience won't help. Secondly, 2009, when our Department of Education was divided into primary and higher education, just as that experience also, wanted to empower us to deal with changes that happen within the department. The last question, the target that we have set for ourselves in the new system of training in technical and vocational, do you think we still manage while so many changes are still taking place? Don't we hold that target and make sure we destabilize our structures and systems before we can set ourselves such high targets of producing students, students in tertiary and vocational colleges? Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Member Tegani, I will now request the...
Thank you, Chair. Let me first say that this migration process is indeed a huge task, but I think we all agree that it is a necessary one. And let me further assure you, Minister, that the DG, who is the accounting officer in the department, is always available to the committee to address our concerns. My question is on slide 9, on key milestone legal. It is reported that only Northern Cape HOD signed off the protocol annexure, and others are not cooperating despite requests from the Department of Higher Education and Training. Is there any recourse for the department to address this challenge? If not, why? Were there any challenges reported by PEDs for not signing off the annexures? I just want to get a sense, why are these HODs resisting? Thank you.
Thank you for your question, Ms. Tunu. This time I want to check if I'm not leaving even Ms. Mbata outside. In the next round, Ms. Mbata. Over to you, Honorable Minister and the DG.
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. In the department, it's not the first time to successfully transfer a function from one area to the other. We did it in regard to sector education and training authorities, and it was quite successful. So in regard to this matter as well, it's a matter which is falling within the project management process that we crafted and adopted as a department with all its components and intricacies. So what is not going to happen? This matter is underpinned by a rigorous change management process. And the component of finances is just one aspect of it, of which in regard to it, we are engaging with provinces, we are engaging with Treasury, GDSA, and there is a tremendous progress that we have made. In actual fact, the letter that the Minister of Finance has written to our Minister in this regard is informed by the processes that are evolving. We also put then to the Treasury as well in appreciating the pronouncement by the Minister of Finance that there are other areas that need to be looked at. So everything is unfolding, informed by the project management process that we have crafted and we are implementing as a department. I thought it's important to clarify the first question in particular in regard to this process. Other questions, my colleagues will come in. But what will happen to deputy principals who are not at the same level? The practice in terms of the Labour Relations Act describes that the conditions of service of every individual are incumbent to that particular individual. They can't be changed. But in this one, we realize that there are some deputies who are disadvantaged. And all those processes we are actually addressing in the department together with the provinces, because funds for the payment of salaries are seen within the budget of provinces. We are rectifying that issue as we go forward. It's receiving our attention quite fully. Honorable Member Kasim, the consequences for the provinces. Now, the process we are engaging in it in collaboration, amongst others, with the Treasury, as well as officials in provinces. We are dealing with the matters in two levels. CM, which is convened by the Minister, engaging all provincial MCs in this regard of education, as well as HEDCOM, where I directly engage with the head of departments in order to outline and clarify all these issues. And this has actually culminated into the pronouncement by the Minister of Finance. So that if they were not there or they didn't make an input, there is no determination which is going to be made. So the Treasury has made the determination in that regard. I don't think it's a matter that we can worry about it. 62%. There is a norm for every institution in the country, applicable even to universities. All what it seeks to say is that any college is allowed to utilize up to 63% of the operational budget for the compensation of employees. At universities, it's also applicable as well. It's talking in that regard. So in terms of the development of norms and standards, it has been established that if the college is to function quite appropriately, it is important to adhere to that norm. And I want to emphasize as well that a college, a university, is student-centered. So all the support mechanisms and systems are towards ensuring that there are facilities for teaching and learning, research in terms of the universities as well. That's why this kind of determination, it can't be correct that the entire operational budget, it goes to salaries, and there is nothing which is making provisions to support teaching and learning. It's for that purpose. It's not something that has just come overnight. So how is it envisioned that nobody will lose at all? What we are talking about, in each and every college, there are programs that are nationally determined. And to that effect, there are employments that are accepted at college level in interaction with the provinces. And those staff members, those educators are captured in the parasite. That's what we are talking about. They are guaranteed. But because of the nature of a college would from time to time employ staff members to offer, for instance, a 3-month program or a week program. You just solicit staff to undertake training in that area, and thereafter you dispense with it. Then a need for training for another program arises, because that's what a college is about, is offering all sorts of programs, including short programs, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So in those areas, it is in the nature of the operations of the college that you solicit somebody who has relevant skills for that time period, and you move forward. So I think it's important to clarify that question. So I'll ask my colleagues to fill in other questions that haven't been answered.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe I need to clarify. If you look at the system issues, and as one of the members indicated, institutions are loosely coupled systems. In other words, they operate within their own environment in terms of the resources that they particularly have. So in this function shift, there would be minimal disruption in regards to the funding and in regards to the processes within a particular college. This is an additional issue that the legislation has put upon us, and that it just changed the employment status. So all the funds in regards to colleges and AH centers are in the baseline and are moving over in debt. So when the statement is made that nobody should be affected, is nobody should be affected if the rules that were set down were followed. Where rules were not followed because of practices at particular colleges, those are things that are going to emerge. Because there's been money, and that money is in the baseline, to pay every single employee and individual. So I think that's the first point that I think I just wanted to make. So that covers 98% of the resources. There was a question, I think two honorable Kenneth asked a question in terms of the success of the 2014 year. We have to go through a process called an adjustment estimate. You put in a request to National Treasury. National Treasury puts that process through Parliament. Parliament takes it through the adjustment estimate process and the appropriations process. And at the end of the day, we have to then follow the mandate that Parliament has appropriated in that regard. So this is the one. The other issue is the issue of what's the personnel. Again, what I want to emphasize is that that's on a very minute technical level. We are talking about some of these particular issues. But the fact is that everybody is employed currently. It's just the nature of the employer, and that there are funds. So the issue is that people will get paid. Now, for whatever reason that cannot be foreseen, if personnel is not operating on the 1st of April for a particular individual, or the information is not correct, we have to do verification of qualifications, etc. If that information is not correct, the person will still have employment, except that the employer would not have changed. The money would still be there. Instead of we paying the person, the funds can go to the college for them to compensate that particular person. In regards to the accountability for implementation of protocol, I think, Chairman, I covered it in my input, that it's a protocol in terms of the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act. The Minister also had alluded to the issue that these are matters that are perhaps Parliament reached a particular deal, there is no censure. And that's one of the reasons, is that there is no accountability in regards to the system of government that we have in terms of spheres of government. If it was tiers of governments, then perhaps one level of government could instruct another level of government. But because of our constitutional particular issue, and therefore in terms of the functions of, I think my answer is that at the end of, but the protocol issue is past the text now. Because at the end of the issue, it was there to be able to identify the resources. Resources have been particularly identified in 98% of the system. The funds we're talking about administration is 2%. And that is something that we just reported was a problem, but now that we've got the funds, the DG has the power to begin to reprioritize to deal with it. The amounts in a different slide, I will have to go through slide by slide to explain that, but if I may just, without going way to the slides. Number one is, we required, because Parliament has already approved the 2014-15 budget, we required money in this financial year to do some of the administrative work. So we made a request, and it was 81 million rands. And in the appropriation process, only 10 million rand was approved. So that's current administration. We're absorbing whatever costs we have to within our current particular budget. We then did an estimation of what would it cost to perform the FET function in terms of administration, not in the college base. But for example, you need people to manage the payroll system, finance people, cleaners, you need people to keep bathrooms clean, etc. And our calculation, based on assumptions of percentages, in terms of what is relatively used for administration, was 491 for TVET. And I indicated another 500 million for AS examinations, etc. Now, that is what we estimated. The provinces then gave us figures, and some provinces did not provide the figures, and then was to show comparatively how far down they were out. In other words, what we had calculated, what provinces were saying that they were, and the Minister of Finance then found the middle particular route. So the funds that are allocated are on the one page that says Minister of Finance. Can I just... the letter of the Minister of Finance, page 27. So that's money in the bank. If you look at it, for further education and training, we're going to getting 2.7 billion. For AX, 1.7. So in terms of institutional stability, that funds to pay salaries, etc., is there. We're talking about a very small amount on administration, but money is there, and we are able to reprioritize it. So that was just a comparison in terms of it. So, Chairperson, we are not sending the message that we can't do anything. We just say it will be hard, it will have to be hard choices that we make, and maybe our delegations, etc., and our savings will have to boost us. The clarity of the 63% is based on the national norms and standards for FET colleges, in terms of the FET Act, which says that there will be program funding, and in program funding, a college gets allocated per learner based on the cost of the program. So if you're a college offering engineering, you probably get in the vicinity of 40,000 rand, or if you're doing agriculture, because you have to have cattle in the farm, you may get 70,000. If you're doing business studies with a learner, that individual FTE, full-time equivalent learner, would be allocated, say, 20,000. In the full cost, this includes personnel costs, maintenance costs in terms of college, and it's 80%. The other 20% the college is supposed to raise, and they raise it in two ways. Number one, NS costs. Covers most of the colleges in terms of the fee component, and in some cases, colleges are able to offer other particular programs. Now, the 63% was worked out by the Figaji group in terms of the cost of programs. They went into detail what worship do you need for engineering, etc. And based on that, what the 63% would be based on would be personnel. So the colleagues from PFA has mentioned that, and we will have to clarify it and go through the scenarios because it's important. But that's how it. Again, no matter what happens, is this process is not going to make anybody unemployed, because the college, if they funded more people, means that they had more money or had other sources of money to fund those people. Because there is no change in regards to that. So we just have to... And that is why, Jefferson, in terms of the FA Act, in terms of Section 187, more people are coming over with existing terms and conditions. You can't give them more, or you can't give them less. In spite of there being varying conditions of service of deputy principals, say, in different provinces. Because the letter of 187 is keep stability, bring people over so that they have no gain and no loss. And then we're going to discussions and consultations with our partners in the unions to begin to see how do we manage that equalization process. The communication issue in regards to stuff, we have communication, letters of circulars. But the expectation, the law is very clear in terms of the expectation. Minister, the money that you have, you can only create full support. That you can't create more money or you can't create more hosts. The revolution is detailed around the identification. And the colleagues from the union, you have them, we have a collective agreement in terms of how we're going to do those particular steps. And so, Jefferson, if there are problems with that collective agreement, then we may want to fix it. But we have that which clearly outlines who comes in and what is the basis of identification of who comes in and who is left out. But if somebody is left out and they're not employed by the minister, the acts don't leave the power with the council to ensure that they deal with those particular employees. And clearly councils would have not appointed people in terms of the law if they did not have the money to appoint them. Because the law says quite clearly, you can only become an employer if you have money in the bank to be able to particularly pay that. The moratorium on colleges not to appoint, that's part of the honorable member, the moratorium was part of the collective agreement in order to protect the rights of those people that were in post in 2009. And when we come over on the 1st of particular April, that is when the issue of permanent and temporary will be looked at, and within that particular year, where there are particular funds that are the baseline, then those posts can be permanent. To the Honourable Whoop, yes, there is much experience, but in fact, the experience of the 14 departments of amalgamation in 1994 and 1995, and the unenviable experience of actually being part of that particular process, is that it was much easier because, in a way, you just took the budgets, you put them on paper, there were people, and you just had to particular. And I think the goodwill was there. There was the administration that was leaving, a new administration coming up, and it actually happened. In some cases, it did happen as smooth for some of the provinces. I'm speaking from Gauteng experience. The South provinces are still living with the implications of some of that particular problems. So I don't know. And then I think I've answered all. Chairperson, please. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, sir. I hope you will excuse me after this.
How to engage with the news. I will also extend this to the stakeholders. It's okay with our members. Just for them to ask critical questions before he leaves. Thank you very much. Let me entertain the critical question so that when the minister responds, he also covers all those critical questions, and then we release the minister to go back to Kali. Thank you. training forum for stakeholder engagement. Yeah, I'm sure the minister will also talk to us about the feasibility thereof. Yeah, that's it. Now, we will then hand over to the Honourable Minister to talk to us on this.
Just a quick one. No one responded to my concern about the 35-hour week and whether money will be therefore available for overtime or additional staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Dear Associate Bishop, to the Honourable Minister, I'm not going to repeat the previous points, particularly around the intergovernmental relations. I just want to get the Minister's own political perspective of the migration and the role of the provinces. But I want to ask the Minister, Chairperson, particularly around the assets of these colleges, so maybe to alert the Minister in some instances, there is buildings that in some cases was transferred by specific state-owned entities, Transnet is one thing, that was transferred for or donated to be used as part of their colleges. And this obviously will be involved in the transfer of the movable assets. And in some cases, there have been indications, Minister, that these buildings have been misused to some extent with local councillors. I don't want to make it political, Chairperson, but some councillors have been taken that and rented it out, portions of these buildings, and have rented it out, the full buildings not being used for teaching purposes. This will obviously now become a problem of your department, Minister. Have you come across any of these instances where the buildings are not adequate for the colleges or part of it is being used that should be used for the colleges for other purposes? And how does the Minister intend to deal with those issues?
For your follow-up question?
Yes, I just wanted to ask actually a similar question with regard to immovable assets, and I wanted to know if the Department of Public Works is conducting any type of audit or if the Department is engaging them to do that. Because the intervention by the Minister to call in the AG to be of assistance is quite welcome, but I think we should just go a little bit further also as far as that is concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for the intervention, Killian, and Sir, over to you from the House.
Now, thanks, Chair. Our vision is the establishment of a professional board, an alternative to this. What we faced with in the SEC is that with that underqualified lecturers. The white paper on sports schooling speak about the establishment of centers. And so far, there's no way it expresses about the establishment of centers. And faith is not a relevant professional body for sports schooling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is related to readiness. How ready is the department to implement this migration? Thank you.
Honourable Minister, it is your turn.
Thank you very much. I'll try and be quick. But let me start maybe on reflecting on some of the questions that were raised earlier.
as well as inputs. I think that with the inputs, especially from the stakeholders, we'd really like to say that we will need to engage around your proposal. What is good is that there are proposals, you see. Some of them, they make sense immediately. Like, for instance, on provincial task teams, on adult education and training. In fact, that may help us to move with speed, because maybe that may have been the gap. You know, there hasn't been real adequate stakeholder participation and drive in the process. But also, I'd like to say that we've been talking in the department that what we may need, especially with community colleges, which will of course include the whole migration and everything, is, for want of a better word, some kind of task team consisting of stakeholders to assist DG in the department. Also play some kind of advisory role, as it were. Because we do realize that a lot of capacity in the area of adult education actually lies outside our department. It's out there in practitioners who have actually been doing that. That's just by way of example, you know, as well as FTC, all the matters they are raising, we may not agree on all of them. But we are committed to engaging. I think we should actually have a discussion around those. We accept, amend, or whatever the case may be. It's really ill appreciated. I nearly forgot the thing I wanted to start with, Honorable Jefferson. I think that, I don't know whether I'd raised this before, where I had hinted at it. The question of ministers' attendance in portfolio committees. I think we might want to consider, for instance, an arrangement which says at least once a quarter, for example. At least minimum, because that would also mean once in 6 weeks in essence, if you count NCOP as well. And then we want to think carefully that if, no, I'm not acting like president in the House, you know, but then we structure that session in a particular way on how best we want to make use of it, you know. I think, Chair, maybe the Commission needs to consider that. It would also help with trying to identify dates well ahead of time, although Parliament in itself can be very unpredictable, by the way, which is also another frustrating matter, you know. For instance, if Parliament tries to see when we've already set a cabinet meeting in Pretoria, it's a nightmare sometimes to then actually want to shift to come in. But if we can work at something like that, because I don't want the impression to be created that we don't take the portfolio committee seriously or that some of us are scared. I'm certainly not scared to come to the portfolio committee to engage on any matter that the portfolio committee or to answer any question that can be raised by any member. In fact, I appreciate that because I find it informative. So, Chair, I thought without taking too much of your time, I'd really like to make a proposal. But it's up to the committee. Of course, if there is more time, you can come more than once a quarter, but at the very least, let's guarantee that. Honorable Suela, yes, it is our intention to bring some renewed energy and stability in the IT sector. Hence, the whole idea of community colleges is really to try and revitalize, but it's not only just revitalization what is existing, but also it's to transform and improve what is existing. For instance, so that IT centers are not only just for improving formal education qualifications, but also that they offer skills that are needed in communities or by individuals. Something that you're vocationally oriented, whatever, short programs, whatever the case may be. Now, Honorable Pastor, is it a breakdown in intergovernmental relations what we're raising? No, I don't think so, not necessarily. I think the answer is by Professor Bozoli to that question. That your education systems and other things, they are like ecosystems, if we were to use that analogy. They've got their own logic, which sometimes present particular obstacles like the thing we were talking about, it's very difficult to part with money, you know, from provinces. But I understood, you know. They also have got their own pressures, you know, but it's very difficult. So it's part of maybe the ecosystem and things that we've got to address. Generally, I think our intergovernmental relations are generally good. But it does not mean that they aren't the reality. So I wouldn't say that it's a breakdown at all. I think, though, this issue that has been raised by stakeholders and also by some of the honorable members, on those staff members who are not going to be transferring to DHET, we will need to disaggregate them. Because I don't find it helpful if we general about it. A true college will always have temporary staff, for instance. Whether it's someone who's been seconded from a company to come and lecture on the new motor vehicle that is on the road, or a temporary person who may be employed by a college during particular times, and that person may not be permanent in the DHET, for instance. So there are always, and there are. So we need to disaggregate it so that we don't deal as if we are dealing with the same kind of category of people. It also helps us to then understand better what is it that we are dealing with. I was going to be saying that, the point that we are raising, you know, I mean, Firoz has answered that, but it's an important one. What lessons can we learn, you know, from our past when 1994, in essence, we're creating new departments, you know, and so on. The point raised by the PSA, I'm wondering whether that isn't a metaphor collective bargaining to be taken back to those to the structures. I'm not so sure. My inclination is that, as Firoz is saying, if that matter, there is a feeling amongst sections of labor movement that were not adequately catered for, then it should be taken back there and actually be discussed in a manner that would be. So is the issue of the 35 hours. By the way, 35 hours is in terms of the Labor Relations Act. But I will agree with you, Professor Puzzoli, this time, that we do need to interrogate, nevertheless, the meaning of this in relation to educators. Because educators, by the way, they don't work in this 35 hours by the nature of their work. When you are marking at night, you normally don't count that. But it's more than the 35 hours. I agree. Similarly, also, educators have got, tend to have longish breaks. Understandably so, because the brain has got to function in a particular way and be given breaks. So the 35 hours become a bit complicated. But what I'm raising is that why we need to have engagement around this medicine. We can't be seen to be exploiting the workers, but at the same time, the work of an educator is quite unique in some respects. As to what it means. It's an issue that I think maybe should engage positively with our educators and not throw stones at them. That's what I would say, you know, because if we throw stones at them, then they will simply not listen and not want to engage on matters, which I don't think they are averse to, by the way, from those of us who normally engage with them in terms of what are the challenges that are there. On infrastructure, I'm finishing now, Chair. We are at the moment auditing, by the way, all our college infrastructure, including its usage. For example, we are doing that because we are picking up that some colleges are underutilized, for instance. If the college functions from half past 7 to 4, I'm making an example, why not have adult education activities at that time, rather than to go and look for new infrastructure for other education training centers? And you mustn't allow that to be negotiated locally, but we do it later and say, you should use this for this particular purpose and so on. through that process, you'll pick up at the kinds of problems that you are actually raising, whether they are buildings that were donated but are being abused and so on. In any case, we are duty bound to do that because, according to the resolution of the ruling party, is that all educational buildings that were used either as former colleges of education and so on, they must be handed over to the DHET. So there is that process that we are dealing with. Now, let me just end by dealing with the how question on space. You know, at the moment, your college lecturers fall under SACE, would be covered by SACE. Now, we can maybe debate going forward whether we should be thinking of a dedicated SACE-type body for college lecturers, or we just need to increase the capacity of SACE to be able to deal better with college lecturers, because at the same time, we must be cautious about replicating structures, creating new structures where the one structure could be able to do the job better if it's refocused or capacitated. We can have a debate on that. We have not thought that maybe we need a dedicated as a department of now. But we'll be more than willing to engage and have a discussion around that and see what is that we actually end up with. By the way, we have also published a policy on professional qualifications for lecturers, which is a related thing, which was partly touching on what kind of lecturers we need and what kind of training that we have. We also have to take that into account when we are looking into that particular question, whether that implies a different body or the same body. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I hope that I have touched even on the additional questions. Thank you.
And if I look at the agenda of this meeting, we're almost done with the business of this meeting with the department and all stakeholders. Now, before I then close, I'll request the DG just to make your in terms of protocol, the minister has already made a closed statement. It's called protocol. Otherwise, I'm telling you, Mr. Kazuma was going to come on you on the protocol violation. All right, from my side, I really would like to thank all of you, firstly, for coming to make this meeting a successful meeting. I would also like to thank all of you for your state of preparedness for this meeting. I've seen that through your robust engagement with the department. But I would also like to thank particularly the minister for the time he has made to come for prioritizing this meeting. Thank you so much, Honorable Minister, for the overview on the migration process, which painted a clear picture of the progress made and the challenges confronting the department. I'd also like to thank the DG for further strengthening and for the further clarity on the migration process issues and all other presentations that brought deeper insight on the migration process, and also for those proposals that the minister said they would look into, but the committee also will look into and use them to make informed recommendations to the House. Indeed, I don't want to spoil this fruitful engagement. It does appear that we've come to the end of our meeting, and I'd like to declare this meeting closed. Or let me use the parliamentary language. The meeting stands adjourned. Yes. Stands adjourned. Meeting stands adjourned.
All right, but then you are invited for lunch. I don't know if the minister will have time to just pick up something. The last one I wanted to say was, we wish the minister a speedy return.